This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah. Is that, it's got Ali's voice and then that sort of yeah at the end. There's something new in that sting. Every week I find something new. Hello. Lucy Porter here for the next couple of hours with a show about for, by, with women. It's woman heavy. Men very welcome to listen as well. In fact, some of you have been. I will share your contributions, gentlemen and ladies, after our first record, which is from our album of the week. And it is Janis Joplin. Producer Amanda, have we got it ready? Yeah. It's
yes, we do. Sorry, I was putting my microphone to say affirmative.
There's too much going on. I surprised you by being a bit quick there.
And then I put up the wrong microphone anyway. And then it's been a disaster for me so far. Lucy.
It can only
I hope
get
my
better.
Performance improves.
Do you know what? You've set the bar low, so we will get there in the end. But yeah, Janis Joplin. That's going to perk us all up. It's you, me, and Bobby. Me and Bobby McGee.
It certainly is. I'm pressing the button. Is that right, Lucy?
You yeah. Do it.
All right, I'm doing it.
Oh, we'll come back more professional.
Just press the button.
Yeah. Work. Well, it's a nightmare. I mean, the whole thing is just completely going to pot, isn't it? I'll sing it. In fact, I won't. That would be a disaster. Shall I just spill while you're...
Yeah,
okay. So I will share with you some of our feedback, which was what I was going to do after Janis Joplin. We have had a surprising amount of feedback on various topics. For those of you who are new to the show, every week... Okay. All right, let's have the record then. Amanda's done it.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train on a speed.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
What a delightful way to start the show. Hello, yes, Lucy Porter, that is me. And my studio guest has arrived. The lovely Jo Burke, who we will be talking to imminently. Let's keep her powder dry. She's got a lovely T-shirt on as well. Saying California with a rainbow. Janis Joplin would have loved that. So we will be talking for the next 2 hours, Jo and I, about women we love. We've already established that Paloma Faith is one of our favourite people in the whole world, so we're going to talk more about that later on.
And tweet. Are we going to tweet her?
I think we should tweet her.
I think we should.
If she wants to tweet in first to make us not look quite so desperate. Paloma, if you're listening, if you're out there, my darling, please. And I'll tell you my story about Paloma Faith, which will only make you love her more.
Oh.
So that's good. We're going to be talking about Coke boobs.
Oh.
Jilly Cooper. Oh. Stuff. Anyway, there's loads of stuff we're going to talk about. And I will, first of all, just deal with the feedback that we have had from the past few weeks' shows. Jo, now what we do is we do a little list in every show. I'll be setting this week's one up later. But one of the lists that we did a couple of weeks ago was ways to make weddings less sexist. Because I was saying that I felt a little bit bad that my wedding, I sort of embraced traditions that I sort of feel actually are a little bit outdated, like I didn't give a speech.
Okay.
And Sarah has emailed in to say that she was also concerned about this when she got married. And so to make her wedding less sexist, she got both her mum and her dad to walk her down the aisle to
nice.
Give her away, which is nice.
Yeah.
And she insisted that both her mum and dad do a speech. And she said she thought this was going to be a brilliant idea, equality in action. But she said it kind of backfired on her because her mum and dad, who have been married for 25 years, they used the speeches, which she must be young. Unless she was born out of wedlock. Let's
possibly.
Not even think about that.
That's modern.
Oh, good Lord. And she said, Mum and Dad used the speeches to slag each other off.
Oh.
And didn't speak to each other for weeks after the wedding.
So it was a battle of the speeches more than a...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just goes to show, if you let women speak...
Weddings are often trouble, aren't they?
I know. Oh, my goodness. If there's not a fight in the car park after a wedding, then I'm
not happy.
You don't
expect it from your mum and dad, though.
I would, actually.
You?
Yeah, no, yes, we didn't. Actually, our wedding, I thought there might be trouble because some of our family were a little bit...
It's normally the in-laws rather than the actual couples, though, isn't it?
Oh, it's always great when you see those stories in the paper about...
It's all off.
Yeah. It turns out the aftermath of the wedding proved they should never have got married. So that was the sexist weddings list that we made. Now, last week, when the lovely Viv Groskop was here, we made a list. Well, it was sort of sexism that you've encountered at work. or gender politics at work, the workplace as a general arena for sexist happenings. And I told a story about how when I was working in a television production company, one of the producers took all of the men from the office to a strip club and told them not to tell the women in the office. And they did.
Of course.
It kicked off a bit.
I bet. Right?
And I met, in fact, this is an actual listener. I met one of our listeners, which was very exciting. Because I wasn't sure they really existed.
No.
You know, you just think, surely we're just talking to the ether. But a girl called Rachel, I was at the Comedy Store in London this weekend, and a girl called Rachel came up to me after my show, and she said, I was listening to your podcast and I have a story of sexism at work. So she worked at an accountancy firm and they were coming up to their Christmas party and they put up the theme, and the theme of the party, an email went round and they said, it's going to be a Vickers and Tarts party. And this woman, Rachel, she was like, well, that's a bit sexy, a bit outdated, isn't it? I mean, there's something sort of quite charmingly 70s about it. I didn't think Vickers and Tarts party
No,
still.
You haven't, yeah. I kind of want to go as a tarty vicar.
Exactly. Well, that's always what you'd do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You'd go, yeah, let's get the sexy vicar costume out.
Yeah.
I suppose because men could go as female vicars.
Yes, now, yes.
Because, you know, this was in the day where we didn't have female vicars at these parties originated.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a man cross-dressing as a female vicar
party.
Interesting. Anyway,
yeah.
But so the Vickers and Tarts party email went out and Rachel was slightly disappointed, but she thought, oh, well, I won't say anything. And then not long afterwards, another email came round and the subject title was Party Change. And she was like, OK, someone else has been on. And the email, sure enough, the email started, we've changed the theme of the Christmas party due to complaints. yes, and now it's a soldiers and tarts party.
because that's better.
Yes, the complaints were religious rather than
sexist. That's hilarious.
So, but soldiers and tarts, because that's really sinister.
That just sounds like food now to me, because it's like soldiers but you have with eggs and tarts. So you could have just gone as soldiers for eggs and a tart and a literal cake tart.
Yum.
Yeah,
that's dressed.
Soldiers and tarts is not right.
Dressed as a food party. But yeah, I just thought that. That was quite sweet. And this one I love. I do love this one as well, but I'll save my favourite one for the end. This is a quick one. Stephen has been in touch, and we did another list a couple of weeks ago now, which was what is unequivocally better about being a woman than being a man. And it was mainly toilet based, that everyone said women's toilets are better. But Stephen has one which he says, one thing that is unequivocally better about being a woman is, I am a man and I get constant slagging at work for using lip balm. I have very dry lips and I use lip balm. And he said the one thing that's better about being a woman is that you can use lip balm with nary a glance or
a
complaint.
Yeah, that is quite true. There is something a little bit wrong, isn't there, about just touching, having a little bit of a lip gloss moment as
a
man.
Yeah, but it's you know, a chapstick. It's called a chapstick.
It is.
But
that's
very
true.
Much,
that is very,
very
good point.
Much used
very
by
good
the
point.
Ladies. But this is my favourite. This is my email of the week, and it is from someone called Helen, who. This is again sexism at work. And Helen says, I had a situation where I thought I'd encountered sexism at work. I was in a meeting with my boss and I saw a memo on his desk with my name and the word tits in capital letters next to it. I didn't say anything at the time, but I mentioned it to HR. My boss called me back into his office for another meeting and explained to me that the reason he'd written tits next to my name was it was actually TTS, because it turned out, and I did know this, I was responsible for the text to speech development program.
And it was not tits at all.
It was not tits at all. So that's the reason I love that is because it's a story with a happy ending. We thought it was sexism at work.
But I had a similar thing when I was about 17, one of my first jobs. And the manager that I was working for, a guy, it was quite late. You know, when you're working late on a Friday night, and he came out, and I think it's because I had in my head about going home kind of thing. And he came out and he said, would you like a drink? And I thought, oh, no,
I don't know. I don't want to go for a drink. I don't want to go for a drink with him. So I said, oh, no, I'm going to meet. I've got to meet friends. I've got, stuff to do. And he went, I meant from the machine.
I wanted to die there and then.
Listen, I like you, but not in that way.
Exactly. Who do you think you are?
So, yeah, that could have been opposite sexism.
That could have been, yes. Thank goodness you didn't slap him around the face.
Yes.
I mean, you know.
Could have been worse.
Could have been worse. So that's what we've been doing in previous weeks, Jo. But what we are doing today is talking to you about your life, your work, your general...
Could be sometime.
Stuff, yeah. We've all got a lot to talk about this week. We will be discussing some news stories also. Mm. I was going to kick off with Coke Boobs.
What is this?
Now, Coke Boobs, it's an interesting story, I think, about the way that the internet is going and being a woman on the internet. So last summer's viral ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, which we all... Indeed.
Yes.
We didn't get sick of that at all, did we?
No, there wasn't enough of those.
No. But, a very worthwhile thing.
Yeah.
Has given way to this year's contender for worst way to make anyone aware of anything while showing off your body, the aptly named Hold a Coke with Your Boobs Challenge for breast cancer or something.
Is that what it is?
Well, it's... I think this actually turns out... So it's... Did you see the put your cock in a sock?
Were you aware of this, Jo? Sorry.
In fact, I think our fellow comedian Russell Kane, I remember,
put
his thing in a what's it?
Took one for the team.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Which is sort of, and you go, that's sort of quite amusing. But the idea of this one was that suddenly women were posting pictures of their cleavages with Coke bottles within, and it was meant to be something about raising consciousness of breasts.
This is very sizist though, because my tiny little boobs couldn't withhold a Coke. I don't know what I mean. Literally, there'd just be mess all over the floor. I mean,
yes.
What, I mean,
one of those cans you get on an aeroplane.
We don't think I could even. Literally. No, you've got to have some quite good boobage there.
Well, I mean, I've got to be honest. This is not important.
Okay.
We shouldn't be debating this.
Okay.
But it turned out, and I was about to get quite, quite upset about this and quite irate, but it turns out it was just a complete hoax. The Breast Cancer Foundation reached out to Esquire to clarify that the organisation does not support this campaign and does not have any additional information about it on its website. Moreover, the hashtag and YouTube campaign, which has driven millions of views, can be traced back to Elite Talent Referral, an adult entertainment talent scouting agency.
Yes, I bet, because actually the adult entertainment boobs would be perfect for that, because they've got less given them, let's just say, haven't they?
They're
more solid.
Well, that's
not
probably
real.
A test that you do when you've had your implants done. Can I hold
a can of
a Coke bottle?
Which is useful, isn't it? Because we're busy, ladies. We're all busy, so it allows you to multitask.
Oh, I do. I mean, I do use very much that area as
a hands-free environment.
Yeah. I have been known. Well, I do sometimes put my mobile phone in my bra.
Do you?
Not in the cleavage, but sort of down the side.
And then put it on vibrate.
But then, no,
Amanda. Try it.
Well, it is normally on vibrate anyway, but it's, I don't think anyone's ever. But then it's a bit icky, and it is, because I did it once at a gig because I wanted to read something off my mobile phone to the audience, and I thought nothing of it, and then pulled my mobile phone out of the side of my bra, and a sizable percentage of the audience went. money, emergency money on a night out.
I've seen a woman. I was on the bus looking out the window, saw a woman with a very sizable cleavage area on her, and produced her purse from there.
Really?
I thought, well, you'd know where it was at all times.
You'd
be rummaging around in your bag. I keep my keys there.
Place, but it's one I don't have. You see, that's my issue with it.
Well, I'm with your sister.
I would like to have that as a prop or as an extra hands-free unit.
Yeah, well, use mine.
I've got
space for it. If anyone needs anything stored, I should rent it out like Big Yellow Storage.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
I'll get a big yellow bra.
Big bra
and,
storage.
Yes.
There we go.
Oh, Hello. Oh, We've gone louder in my headphones. Sorry, everyone listening at home.
I was trying to turn mine. There we go.
That's good. Yeah, that was nice. It won't mean anything to you at home, but in the studio, we all... Whoa, gosh, there we go. But yes, there's no sort of real message about the Coke boob story, except don't be conned into posting pictures of your breasts. Also, the fact that it's a Coke bottle... It's like just free advertising, isn't it?
Also,
for a legal corporation.
Why does it have to be just women? There's lots of moobs out there.
There are.
So, you know, I bet, were there any moob Coke boobs?
You'd imagine someone will probably have done. Maybe Russell Kane. Maybe he's doing them all.
Covered.
He's going to embrace everyone. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who works for a charity who was saying that the brilliant ALS Ice Bucket Challenge has really ruined everything for fundraisers, yeah, for charity fundraisers, because everyone's trying to come up with the next one. And the problem is now there are so many slightly lame... Mm. I mean, because I can imagine this being a real one, the idea of, oh, yeah, this will get people to post pictures of themselves, you know, the Coke boobs thing. It's actually, you know, it's not a bad... It's the horrible interface, isn't it, between, you know, you go, doing anything for charity is kind of okay, but not making women put pictures of their breasts online. Mm. But where do you draw the line, you know? I mean, the cock in a sock, I think, was... sort of pretty much on or near that line. But then men do enjoy, you know, I mean, anything that encourages men to nudity gets a massive take up, right?
That and dressing up as women, they
yes,
love it.
They do.
Can't get enough, can they?
And they look better often, which
sometimes
is annoying.
The
often
legs.
Got better legs.
Yes. Better legs.
I am so with you on
it's
that.
It's a classic.
It's disgusting, isn't it?
Mm.
It's absolutely, you know.
My husband is 6'5" and has dressed as a woman
legs.
On many occasions. he is an actor, but that may not be always strictly relevant. But yeah, there was one. What was it for? He did some. Anyway, something. And yeah, and I mean, he's 6'5". He's got
so
unbelievable legs.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's I can never compete. That's why I married someone who's totally different to me. I'm 4'11". I've got little rugby player legs. I've got absolute, you know, total stocky little. But they're useful. I don't care. I love having a powerful.
Legs are useful in general.
They really are. They really
I'm all for them, whatever shape or size.
Yes to legs. Okay. So that leads me on. It doesn't lead me on at all, but I've just picked up another
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, do that.
Okay, Darth Vader is for girls too. The young fan who forced Disney to change toy labels. Star Wars fan Izzy Cornthwaite wanted a Darth Vader costume and a lightsaber for her 8th birthday, but upon exploring the UK Disney Store's website with her mum, Rebecca, she was devastated to see that the outfit was listed as a boy's costume. Her face fell, says Rebecca. Her eyes filled with tears and she said, I can't have it. It says they're only for boys. Aww. But Izzy decided not to take it lying down, and following a quick chat with her mother about gender stereotypes, she wrote to Disney to explain her sadness about how the costume is labelled and received a reply saying the description for this costume has now been amended as we understand that all our little Jedis enjoy Star Wars.
Yes.
So... Another positive. We're very positive at the start of the show. Legs are good.
Legs are good. Darth
and
Vader
Disney
is definitely not just for boys. That's outrageous.
Well, it turns, you know, the whole thing about Darth Vader is it doesn't matter who's in the costume because, of course, in the original films, it was the West Country Dave Prowse, the Green Cross Coat
Man. Your father, Luke.
Yes.
Take it or leave it.
I think he was genuinely upset, wasn't he?
He was, because he genuinely thought
he was going to be the voice as well.
I know, and then suddenly turned up. He was, wasn't he? He turned up and it was like, they gave it to James Earl Jones instead.
Yeah. Funny that.
It is, because he originally from the West Country, Dave Prowse, but also lives in Croydon, the town
of my
birth.
And that's where he lives now?
Yes. Well, I believe so. He certainly did. When Croydon put in their last bid to become a city, which they do every now and then.
That's
it's
adorable.
So sweet. I know. The triumph of hope over experience. It is ridiculous. They've done it so
we've
many
got
times.
Trams. 1 o'clock tower. And they've got a Darth Vader that lives there.
Exactly.
Surely that's a great selling point.
Well, they did. They listed all the people from Croydon, and it was Kate Moss.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Sir Philip Green, mate
is
of Kate Moss. He's from Croydon. He was born in Croydon. Doesn't live there now. Obviously, he lives on yachts in Monaco, etc.
Mainly.
But he was born in Croydon. And Darth Vader, who wasn't actually born there but lives there.
Yeah.
And that was... Hey, that's our city bid. Proud.
Aww. Darth Vader. I've got a costume.
Yes. You shouldn't have worn it really into the studio, but but no, it's a common. I mean, we have had this discussion before, Amanda and I, many times about, because I have small children, and the sexism of the way toys are marketed and labelled is really annoying. And it's mainly, you know, you can see why they do it, because they make the same toy in pink and blue so that they sell twice as many, because you can't hand down toys and clothes and things from boys to girls. Although we have, I mean, in our family, we have bucked that trend completely. And my son, God love him, he relaxes at home in ladies' clothing.
Excellent. I love him already.
And no, he loves it.
That's adorable.
While his dad looks after him in drag.
Nothing normal here.
I'm there smoking a pipe in my smoking jacket. It's fine. I don't want anyone to think that our family is odd in any way at all. But yeah, I think it's become such a well-debated and discussed issue now, though, that I think even Disney... I mean, you know, Disney, who have encouraged more than any other corporation the princessification of little girls, and you know, it's they have done bad, but I am glad to see, because you know, we're all saying, well, Frozen is a much better depiction. If it's going to be princesses, at least they're kick-ass princesses, and it's about the love between sisters. If you haven't seen Frozen, it's
makes
you
no
know
sense.
It, yeah, it's you'll be
I haven't seen Frozen.
Frozen is, so it's a princess film, but it's not about a princess being rescued by a man, it turns out. And if spoiler alert here, so it turns out, they say, the kiss of true love is the only thing that can save this princess, or an act of true love is the only thing that can save this princess, and the act of true love is her sister saves her. Aww. So you think it's going to be this guy, but actually it's the, you know, and
he
so
turns out to be useless.
He turns out to be, well, one of them turns out to be evil. There's an evil prince.
An evil guy. Oh,
yeah. Preparing them for life.
Yes. I know. It's like, yeah, you
one of them will be useless. One of them will turn out to be a complete cock.
One of them will fancy you and you won't stand him. The one you really love will love with someone else.
Yeah, your sister will get off with someone. Yeah, no, you should come and watch it with my children. This would be excellent. Just life lessons. But yeah, so Disney are gradually improving, which is good. And apparently the new Pixar Inside Out is just excellent.
I've seen the trailer. It looks great.
It does, doesn't it? It looks amazing. Really, it's a sort of numbskulls. For those of you old enough to remember the numbskulls, it's kind of that sort of vibe. It's a people inside people's heads. It's very good. Good. So Disney, good. Susanna Reid. Let's do all the sort of nice little light pop culture. Should we do all the nice little pop culture stories, and then we can move on to meatier stuff? Susanna Reid, I was reading this today in the Free Metro newspaper, that Susanna Reid, who I really like.
Yes, Strictly Susanna Reid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like a bit of Strictly, yes.
Do you like Susanna? I like her work on Breakfast Television. And generally, I think she's quite a good egg.
Yes, she came across very well in Strictly.
Did she?
Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I'm glad. I like
this. This is my level of knowledge.
It's all we need.
Sparkles.
That'll do. She wore her sparkles well. But I thought she had a very good point here. Susanna Reid, the Good Morning Britain presenter, has defended her friendly technique in interviews, saying chewing her pen and flashing her pins are emphatically not the same as flirting, because she was accused of flirting with David Cameron when she interviewed him, which the idea of flirting with David Cameron makes a little bit of sin come into my mouth.
Yes, no one would do that. Ooh. No one, no.
Even his wife, I'm sure, is not flirting with David Cameron. But she was filmed smiling at him while nibbling the end of her pen. But, you know, people sort of said, oh, she was flirting with him. She was being coquettish. And, you know, sometimes you do think, what are we saying about women in journalism when we do that? You have to accept a certain level of scrutiny, but it does frustrate me sometimes. Of course it does. And yes, you know, you do think that any friendliness, it's the awful misreading of signals that can go on in daily life as well, isn't it? Mm. But the idea that chewing the end of your pen, because I do all kinds of things that I'm not really aware of. And I would rather the people I was talking to, I mean, for example, just sort of getting things out of my bra.
Getting your sandwiches out of your fiddling out your cleavage.
I feel like she's coming on to me for sure. Definitely. The posture, it's all going on.
I'm getting jealous.
Me and Darth Vader out.
Well, I have found myself, you know, talking actually before about lip balm and poor Stephen of the chapped lips.
Yes.
But if I have dry lips, I do kind of, you know, just sort of lick just find myself licking my lips. And I do remember once being on a tube and kind of suddenly catching someone's eye. And I was giving my lips a, you know, like a real... And this man, to his credit, he just looked startled. He didn't respond in any way. But yeah, I think particularly female journalists and interviewers are either accused of being lightweight and and not up to the job of doing serious journalism, or sort of being too harsh or unfeminine. Like the
Kay Burley comes in for a lot of
well,
stick.
Yeah, I don't wish to rush to defend Kay Burley, but I think she does get criticism in a way that maybe a man
wouldn't
quite so
yeah.
much. Yes, I fully agree. But who was there was a war correspondent who had a terrible amount of stick because she had young children.
Oh, Alex,
Alex from Sky News,
yes,
wasn't she? Yeah,
I love her.
She got we can't remember her name. Sorry, Alex,
I love her so, Alex.
Yeah, but she came in for a terrible amount of stick because she had young children, and people said, how could you be a war reporter when you have young children? Which, of course, they wouldn't say to men in a similar situation. And it is, you know, we really desperately need women doing news reporting and, you know, older female journalists. Because in a way, I think in America, there's always been, you know, your Barbara Walters, kind of older, more respected female journalists. And it does seem like, you know, if you are a female news reporter, you do tend to disappear in this country.
But we bin women off early all the time. I mean, Kate Ady was great and didn't stop being great.
Alex Crawford.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry.
That's
just just wanted to...
It would be rude not to mention it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. People are out there. Sorry, yeah. Yes, carry on.
No, I was just saying Kate Ady, sort of, they just disappear. And there's a whole big thing in Hollywood at the moment about the Scarlett Johansson and a lot of the... what's the Gyllenhaal? No, not the two Gyllenhaals.
Maggie
Gyllenhaal, is it her? Someone got turned down the part of someone's
That's right.
wife.
That's
is
right,
that one
because
of
she was...
she was considered too old to play the part
at 37,
of a... 37,
she was too old to star opposite a 55-year-old man. Female leads... See, but, again, you see, I was surprised to read that female leads are on average 4.5 years younger than their male counterparts in Hollywood movies, and the age gap is only slightly smaller on films directed by women, according to new research. I thought it would be more than that, because I'm sure... I mean, it's when you do see, like, the latest Al Pacino, Danny Collins, where his love interest is Annette Bening, and she's 57 and he's 75... And you sort of go, that is quite a gap. That is quite a gap. And but it's not that unusual. Helen Hunt and Jack Nicholson, I remember that being one that struck me particularly.
Yeah.
And it's like, of course, these age gaps do exist in real life, but they do seem to exist more in Hollywood.
Definitely.
But also, the age gap has been coming down over time. In 1984, it was around 10 years on average. But by 2014, it had settled down around 7 years. The closest years by age gap were 1988 and 2009, when the men were just 0.6 older and 0.6 years and 0.8 years older.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. Those were the two completely unrelated years.
I wonder what happened there, that blip.
Goldie Hawn.
I love her.
Yeah. Because she is on average 8 months older than her male leads, her male co-stars. And Sandra Bullock, 1 year and 4 months older.
Again.
I mean, it's hardly, you know, there are very few instances I can think of a much older woman, or a significantly older woman with a younger man where it's not the focus of the film. So you've got, The Graduate, the age gap between Bancroft and... Dustin Hoffman was tiny. Was
really?
Absolutely tiny. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I'm going to Google that live.
Interesting.
And she, I think, was sort of slightly aghast that she was being cast as this much older woman. But yeah, when a woman is older, it tends to be a point of, a plot point of the film, doesn't it? But if anyone can think, actually, of films about... an older woman and a younger man where it isn't the main thrust of the film about an age gap relationship, then do tweet
my
in.
My cogs are turning.
Can't think of any. But anyway, that's, again, you see, I'm obviously in a very positive mood today, because even though there is still this terrible and persistent age gap between men and women in Hollywood, because it was slightly less bad than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I'm delighted. Like, it's actually only 4 years, the average age gap between male and female romantic movie leads. That's not too bad.
No.
It's getting better, and it is getting better. Things are getting better. Now, all positive, lovely things. Shall we have a record now?
Yes.
Before it starts. Then let's get on to the really nasty negative stuff, shall we?
Well, we can have something from the album of the month or something else.
Album of the month?
Of the week. Just feels like a month. That's another show I do here, actually. So
a month is a lady week.
So what do we want? Do we want the album, an album track or something else?
Something else. Surprise us. Go on.
All right, then.
Not that I don't love the album of the week, but we'll talk about that later. So we'll do a bit more chat and then we'll have another Janis Joplin.
We're going to have Garbage, It Only Happens When It Rains.
Oh, okay. The siren went off. We were all surprised.
The FUBAR
siren. It does spook me slightly, that, I'll be honest with you. It makes me feel, as a child of the 1980s and the, you know, the whole nuclear threat of nuclear war, a Cold War baby, it's anything with a siren. I'm like, it's the 4-minute warning.
Mm. I've seen threats.
Got to get under the stairs. Now, let's not actually go dark, because, do you know, I'm in such a positive mood that I also, when you said it's garbage, only happen when it rains, I thought, ugh.
Yeah, you didn't just think it, you said it.
I went, oh, and then actually ended up really quite enjoying it and going, actually, I quite like Shirley Manson. I don't know why I was being such a negative cow. So let's not go dark. Let's not talk about bad news stories. Let's welcome, because I realised we've got our wonderful studio guest, Jo Burke, and we haven't even really introduced you to the listeners. We haven't established who you are. So you are a comedian.
Yeah,
A stand-up comedian, character comedian, all kinds of comedian.
Yes, all kinds of
all things to all people. Member of a sketch
basically,
group.
Basically, yeah.
I first encountered you at the Edinburgh Festival, which you are doing again this year.
I am, yes.
Which we will talk about. We'll do that right at the end, so that we can get that final plug-in for people who are going to Edinburgh. But so tell me about, you're from South East London.
I am a South East Londoner.
Whereabouts exactly?
So I am from SE9, which is Eltham.
Very
I live now in Kidbrook, which is like a mile away. So, but I'm getting closer to Blackheath, which is very posh, you see. Anyone that knows the area.
I do.
I'm struggling over to the Heath.
You'll never get to Blackheath.
I'll never
None
get
of
to Blackheath.
Us will ever get to Blackheath.
No.
Give it up now, love. Give it up now. It's an impossible dream. But yes, it's a lovely area. It's probably the most trendy, for those of us listening outside of London. South East London is the most kind of trendy, up-and-coming, amazing place now. But when you were growing up in Eltham, tell us of your life.
Well, the thing is, see, this is the thing. I'm from a very working-class background and a council estate in said Eltham.
Yep.
But we were always very proud because we lived just literally half a mile from Eltham Palace, you see.
Yes.
So whenever I used to go anywhere, Mum would go, don't ever be ashamed of where you're from. Not everybody's got a palace where they live.
Croydon Palace doesn't exist.
Exactly.
We never had a palace to call.
You've got a Darth Vader now, so he does trumpet.
Exactly.
But yeah, so we grew up with the palace in the background, kind of thing. So we never. It was just. It was always quite nice, really.
Yeah.
And when you're a kid, you don't know that you're living in a dysfunctional area until somebody tells you, do you?
No, it came as an absolute revelation to me.
I was blissful. I had a great childhood. Out on bikes the minute you came home from school, did stuff, roller skating. Not now. All the kids are just glued to a screen and indoors and very pasty looking. And, it was good.
I mean, we were still pasty looking. But
were
we,
you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose we were pasty. There's still no real sun, was there, even if you were outdoors?
No, and we were all eating Finder's crispy pancakes constantly. And
Birdside potato waffles.
Waffles. Waffly, very How sick are my children of hearing? Because I do. I feed them waffles, because why wouldn't you? And they always say, oh, don't sing the song, Mummy. Like, you can't not. There is no way anyone of our age chicken. I do birthday potato. I bought some shake and back the other day.
I was just thinking that
purely because I saw
it's so catchy, isn't
and I
it?
Thought I've got to teach the kids to do the shake and back.
The shake and back dance. Yeah, and
they did. In fact, it was one of those things that I thought, oh, this is adorable. My son doing the shake and back song. And I thought, oh, I'll put that on Facebook. And then I thought, no, you're a dick. You're the kind of person who puts a film of your child doing something cute back on Facebook, don't it? But anyway, so your comedy was forged in Elsham. And so tell us about your life then. What happened after that?
So, it's a long story, isn't it? I don't know where to start.
Not that long.
It
not
is
that
quite
old.
Long. It is quite long. No, I did. You leave school. Nobody tells you about university when you come from a place like that. So you leave school at 16 because it's very helpful if you can help your parents pay their rent.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So I did that. And my first job was in a bank, Barclays Bank, Regent Street, next to Liberty's.
Up west.
Yes,
very nice.
Yes, my first job. And I absolutely hated it because despite everyone going, oh, job for life, and being very proud because you've got this job that's in a bank, job for life. I was there for like 2 days and thought, I can't bear this or anybody here.
Yeah.
And everyone was having affairs, which I come from a very solid background where, you know, people are married for a very long time and love each other. So that threw me. I was like, oh, I don't like the real world.
God, well, let's hope there's no one listening from the Barclays Bank Regent Street.
Where, not
hang on, my wife's been working there for many years. Yeah. She always comes home late. Oh, gosh.
So I basically left there after about 6 months and just decided that I wanted to work in TV, which you could do then because it wasn't so... Yeah. You know, everything was much more flexible then.
Well, you got
no
paid
experience
for jobs, which is something that would never happen in television now.
Yeah, and I just went to work at Yorkshire TV, which was based actually in Holborn, the London office.
Yeah.
So I just went straight from there to there. And obviously that I did enjoy that there, even though I was doing sort of admin-y stuff. I was in an environment that was creative and I liked blah, 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 that kind of thing. So, yeah, so that's what I did sort of early days. And then I only started comedy actually about 5 years ago, but that was on account of being sort of a failed actress for the 10 years before that, and I got absolutely pissed off with waiting for people to call me for shit adverts. So I just basically thought, you know what, I can write stuff better than most of these adverts.
I can write these shit adverts
and I will. And that's what I did. And actually in my show that I'm doing at the moment, because I did start doing characters basically because being an actor, I never wanted to go on stage as me. You know, that's the last thing you want to do. I trained for 3 years to not do that.
Yeah.
So I fought it. I fought it for years. And so when I started to do stand-up, naturally I did characters for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And I loved doing it. And then this is my fifth Edinburgh show, but it's the first one as me. Me for a whole hour.
Are you going to start it with, I'm coming out?
No, I started with something similar, but I start as a character that I come out of, basically.
Oh, good. Okay.
Basically, just to kind of, although if you haven't seen me be characters, you wouldn't know, but it kind of still makes sense within the show as well. But
people don't just think, oh God,
they do think
she's
weird.
Broken character.
What's she doing now?
Oops.
This is not a sketch show. but the part of the show that I'm doing at the moment as well is I take people through some really hilarious castings that I've had in the past. One of my huge things is the fact that women with words is a very rare thing.
Yes.
So, have a small rant about that.
The
as
number
well.
Of yes, I too have done advertising casting. I used to do them because my agent would send. For those of you who are not lucky enough to be in the glamorous world of show business, so as an actor or a comedian, you get called upon to go to advertising castings, which is the most humiliating part of your job. And I know this sounds like boohoo, you know, actor problems. Oh, it's slightly humiliating, but it really is. You're in a room with, quite often as a woman, it's models, it's all models. And then I remember once going for a hair product commercial, and I don't know why I was ever up for it, but it was all models and you had to swish your hair. That was the entire thing, was they said, if you could the ad campaign is going to be, you're walking along and you're so entranced with your hair, you keep looking at it in different surfaces, so can you swish your hair as if you're looking in a shop window, now can you swish your hair as if you're looking in a car mirror, now can you swish your hair. And I was like, I've only got one swish, I have not. These other women, they're models, it's like this sort of blue steel kind of thing. It's like, I've got swish A, swish B. But yeah, and you're always put in these situations. And as you say, as a woman, quite often you don't have any words. You are there to react to the male lead by tutting.
Yes.
Rolling your eyes. Yes. You know, because it is a terrible thing that a lot of my male friends complain about advertising, that the kind of reverse sexism of men are incompetent and women are exasperated by the incompetent men. I mean, it's become such a familiar trope in advertising that it is so wearing when you go for yet another.
The other one is as well is when casting directors seem insistent, and it's because the advertising agencies are insistent that these moments happen. The moment, if you could just capture that moment when you X, Y, and Z. There are no moments like that. Those moments do not exist. I can't do the look of that moment because it's not real.
Yes. Oh,
so
gosh.
It's just, you know, moments.
No.
Not with the moments.
No moments.
Not so much.
There are no moments.
Let's just do real.
There's also something called a chemistry, chemistry reads, which you do when you are auditioning for parts where you have words. But I have been tried with various different men in advertising castings to see who you have chemistry with, and the answer is inevitably none.
I got down to the last two for a massive BBC job about a month ago that would have been like a whole series playing a lead in a BBC series.
Oh my gosh.
And I got down to the last two and I blamed the chemistry because it was me and one guy that they'd chosen but a couple of women, so the guy got the job and a couple of, and it's like, obviously I didn't have the chemistry with him.
Oh,
it's
dear.
Like so sad. Ruined my career now.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not something you can fake, is it? I mean,
but again,
it
as well, I, exact same thing though, because he had the scene we were doing was all him.
Yeah.
And I had about three words that were in three separate lines of in inputting stuff while he was having basically a speech.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
How you're supposed to actually gain any chemistry with somebody when actually you've got okay in between someone doing da 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 da.
Yes, darling.
It's so tough. It's really tough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have lost count of the number of sitcom reads that I've done where it's, you know, again, it's this thing of it's the useless man and you have to be. You know, all your lines are negative, all your lines are going, oh, I can't believe you said that. Well, why are you doing that? You know, and you're just like, I'm such a cow. I don't want to be like, you know, no. This humorless, awful. And, but you know, the problem is with anything like that, you can't rewrite it. And the awful thing is sometimes when you do improvise, particularly with advertising castings, and they say, oh, we'd like you to improvise. And then you improvise in such a way that you show your utter disdain for everything that they have done beforehand. In fact, I did do a really lovely one with another male comic who I knew, and it was for crisps. It was for crisps, and it was the old thing of me trying to nick the guys. Crisps and him being annoyed about this and it was sort of anyway we ended up just having a really good laugh and because they'd sort of said, oh yeah, well, you know, on the pitch document said, you know how annoying it is, guys, when your girlfriend says she doesn't want a pudding but then she nicks yours or she doesn't want, and we were like, that is such an old observation.
Yeah.
And so we ended up just throwing crisps at each other and wrestling, and it was just really good fun. And it was really, you sort of think, well, actually, why? Not that I'm saying that there are talented and creative people in advertising, but quite often you think, why don't you just sort of workshop it a bit with actual people rather than a room full of suits?
Often it's the clients that have the end say so on who they choose, because even jobs I have got in the past. One of my first ads was actually in Germany and Poland, and when we were on the lunch break, we got talking to the two clients that were there, and they said, do you know why you got this part? And I thought, oh, they're going to say something nice.
Yeah.
Because I look like one of their wives.
Oh my gosh.
So if you don't happen to look like any of the clients' wives, you might as well not attend the casting.
Wow. Hastily looked up online all advertising.
Yeah. Isn't it hilarious? It's like, well, that's a body blow, thanks.
That's the thing though about acting that I think is as much as acting is a very sexist world, you do know that both male and female alike, some of the reasons that you will have been turned down for stuff will be that inconsequential and stupid.
Yes.
And also that it is just first impressions.
Yes.
I think I used to get, when I didn't get an audition that I went for, I used to sort of take it personally and get a bit upset. But then having sat on the other side now in auditions, sort of things I've written, and people come in and you just know instantly for some reason, you do just kind of go, oh no, they're amazing, but they're just not right for this. And so I think I'm much more sanguine about it now than I used to be. I no longer go back into the room going, why don't you want me?
Hanging on to their legs. No, you must go now.
Going, turning up at restaurants in Soho, going, look, I do look like your wife. Look at her. I'm just like, I've dyed my hair. desperate times. I think, and you are free to agree or disagree, but I do think that actually the very action of doing stand-up is incredibly freeing when you have been used to being an actor, or, you know, in my case I was sort of writing and trying to get stuff away, and then you start doing stand-up and you go, oh, actually I can say what I want, I can do what I want, and I am my own boss.
Yes, I agree. And funnily enough, even though that for the last 4 years I've always done characters, I'm enjoying this show the most out of everything I've ever done, which is so bizarre because it's also been the scariest thing for me, because even though I've been fairly fortunate, whereas I've not had that many tumbleweed moments as characters and stuff, I think I would have always just thought, they just don't like the characters in my head. But when you're there as you, it's like, no, they just hate you.
Yeah. But then if they like you, then it's me. They like me.
Yeah,
I'm okay.
Yeah, that's a weird thing as well, because I've just done the Brighton Festival. Did you have a show down there as well?
No, I have never done.
Neither have I. First year I've done Brighton.
I've done the Brighton Comedy Festival in the autumn, but the Brighton Fringe Festival. Is it great? Should
we
go?
I absolutely loved it. It's so much cheaper than Edinburgh. It's an hour's drive for me. I don't know what I was thinking, why I've never done it before.
The weather is statistically in May in Brighton is better than August in Edinburgh, really.
There's no trench foot. And I had an absolute blast. I loved it. And I was like, you idiot, why have you never done this before? So
you're calling me an idiot there by extension, Joe, if I just could point that out. I'm an idiot as well.
I am an idiot because I did really enjoy it. And the other thing is, you can see why people do it, naturally, of course, but other people are sensible, because I did feel really Edinburgh ready, because it's exactly, obviously, you're doing it in rooms above pubs and things, so it's exactly like the Edinburgh.
It's a bit stuffy and uncomfortable
and you meet the audience as they're coming in kind of thing, and you know, it's a real bunker atmosphere, and I really loved it. And of course, I came back from that all ready and fired up, thinking, yeah, Edinburgh's going to be great. And then the Cowgate Head thing landed, literally.
Oh, dear. We were talking about this off air, and we won't go into this for the listeners, because it's as dull as you could ever hope. But if you go to the comedy industry website, chortle.co.uk, you'll be able to see that there has been a brouhaha.
A brouhaha.
Involving a venue at the Edinburgh Festival this year, and poor Joe was caught up in said fiasco.
But not as unlucky as a lot of people.
But your show is still going ahead at the correct time.
Yes, as advertised.
As advertised, unlike a lot of other people. Shame. It is a shame that there is sort of one of the downsides of comedy becoming more popular and more of an industry is that now people are taking things a lot more sort of seriously, and there's a lot more aggro on the admin side.
Like you said, it's not very, it's a bit dull and boring, that kind of, you know.
It's industry infighting, which no one else will be interested
in. But also, it has been rather hilarious, because the three people at that venue involved are all called Kenny. Three Kennys, which is just genius. And their surname is War. But it's not spelled War, W-A-R, but it might as well be, because that's what's happened.
It's Kenny's at War. I mean, really, there is a sitcom pitch in this. That
there definitely is.
Three generations of the same Scottish family have all promised an Edinburgh Fringe venue to different people. And this has all come to a head. To a Cowgate Head, indeed. And I really do picture, and this is, I'm at risk of being libelous here, but I have never seen, I do not know the Kennys involved, but in my head they are tiny, furious, drunk Scottish men. It's almost like a Steptoe and Son, but it's a comedy venue and there's three of them.
It is just so hilarious.
Because it's three generations of Kennys, and I am fascinated to see them. I really am. So, yes, anyone who's interested in this story, anyone who wants to help me write the sitcom of the three Kennys.
Well, I started writing, when it happened, I started writing just because I was so frustrated when there was a gap, a period of a week where I didn't know whether I had my show, basically. So I wrote Cowgate Head Gate the musical, which had the three Kennys in it. It had the, all the other people involved in it as well. And it was just a complete farce, which is what it is.
Yes. So, oh, I think that might have legs, actually. There you
go. I was thinking about trying to get it put on in the Fringe, but in a paid venue.
Yeah, at the Pleasance, a massively well-funded musical about the Fru Festival. That would be great. What was your... Now, going back to your characters, that you, I know you're sort of leaving them behind to a certain extent, but...
Well, they've just packed them away for a bit. I haven't put them... Yeah,
Which was your favourite of the characters?
My favourite will always be the first one I did, which was Mary Magdalene, the mad, drunken Irish spinster who wears a wedding dress
on a
daily
basis. Are you of Irish extraction yourself? Or is this just a racist stereotype?
Actually, my dad's dad was Irish and my mum's mum was Irish, but neither of them had Irish accents. But
you're sort of Irish enough to get away with
Yeah,
it,
kind of.
My people
Burke's
will allow
very
that,
Irish name, isn't it? Yeah, but I just love her. I adore her. And people seem to like her as well. So
did you not once slap an audience member in the face with the tenor lady?
I did, just because I used to do... She used to do a spoof burlesque to Thriller, to Michael Jackson's Thriller. And so she used to take, obviously, the wedding dress off in a very... In fact, most men that ever saw it said that it'd put them off burlesque for life. And that was kind of the intention of the piece.
That's fantastic. What a service.
And it ended with I used to have a I think it's a tenor lady, because it's like the most massive tenor lady that you can buy, like the biggest one. And I used to just drench it with Jack Daniels and lob it into the audience at the end, saying, "I don't think you could ever go too far."
Class. But
the first Edinburgh, which was a PBH Edinburgh Fringe that I did, the very first one in 2010. You know what it's like on the free Fringe? People say, "Can you bring kids?" And so I always, I always warn anyone. Say it is quite adult content. There's a little bit of effing and jeffing. But it's all done in good fun. It's nothing nasty about it. It's all in good fun. But, you know, and I'd explain what sort of went on. And that particular there's a photo on my Facebook. They sat right at the front, because I'd said to them, sit at the back, because if you're worried, you can just take them out. Well, they were about 15.
Okay, so
15, 14 and 15, or something like that.
Oh, my gosh. Male or female?
A boy and a girl. In fact, I think the girl was probably slightly younger. But yeah, I whipped it around and it didn't go as far as I thought. And it just slapped two kids. Oh, and it was so big, it practically got both of them.
So not only will you have scarred them for life, but you also drenched them in alcohol, which is technically illegal. And we should point out that won't be happening at your show this year.
No, it won't. I don't throw anything. No, I don't.
Who are your favourite other sort of female comedy characters from either contemporary or classic?
I grew up kind of loving Victoria Wood and Julie Waters, and sort of that was back in the day when you didn't sort of have to be posh; you could be working class and talented and get somewhere, you know, not easily, but you know, you could graft and do it. And also, they were just amazing and still are. And I think it's because they were, especially with Victoria Wood, a writer, because I do a lot of writing. In fact, I've got a book coming out very shortly.
Wow! Hello.
Yes. And it's the same title as my show, because I suddenly realised that I actually wrote the book 10 years ago. But it had a different name. It was called From Strangers with Love, because it was about internet dating, a year of internet dating. So you've got the messages to and from, which are hilarious, and then dates that I did go on and reasons why I didn't go on other dates but it kind of fitted in, because I do read two excerpts from the book in the show that I'm doing at the moment, and I thought it'd be a really good time to actually just publish the book.
What is the show and the book called now?
They're both called I Scream, as in like iPod, a small I and then Scream.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and what can you give us a sort of a highlight from your time of dating? I mean, when I say highlight, obviously I mean low light. I don't want a nice story. I want a terrible story.
There are terrible ones, but the thing is, there are just so many. I mean, anyone that's done... I mean, internet dating is probably a bit old now. Everyone's on Tinder, aren't they? Which is just much more cut to the chase kind of kind of stuff. And actually, even I'm on Tinder. My friend put me on Tinder, and I said, "Don't put me on it. Is it just about people that just want sex?" No. The first message I got was very specific about what.
Kind of sex was required.
Yes, and so I deleted it.
Just do a mime or whisper it to me.
No. What it was, it wasn't even specific about that. It literally, no introduction, no anything. It just said, because obviously you have to match before they came. It just said, desperate for a nosh, where are you? Oh. That was the first Tinder message I
had. You had me at desperate.
Yes, exactly. Gosh. I was like, not for me. And the other thing on Tinder, how many guys, I don't know if the women do it as well, have pictures of them with their children?
Oh, really?
This is my, it's like that. Baby faces and children faces is no place for Tinder, is it? Surely. Why are they doing that?
No, that is Facebook.
Are they trying to make themselves look better by advertising their children on a sexual relationship site?
My genitals work. Here's one I made earlier.
Here are my abs. Here are my twins. It's just like so bizarre, so strange.
I am not on Tinder, even though I did get a message from someone saying, I saw you on Tinder. Is your marriage okay or something?
Really?
Someone has obviously
put your photo.
So, but I'm not going to go on to investigate. It's just such a every comedian now has a routine about Tinder. Every sort of young single comedian, and it does make me feel incredibly out of touch because I never even really did internet dating. If I'm honest, I just used to. I had pen pals.
How did you meet your husband?
Comedy Circuit. He was a character comedian,
really?
Funnily enough, Joe. Yes.
Yay! I love him.
And I
knew it from the minute she said drag.
In fact, well, he also used to soak the audience with booze in his shows. So,
not on a tenor lady, though.
Just from his own face. It was all... It was all a bit unnecessary.
From his own face.
So he just spit out booze and he used to hand round...
So you met in a normal fashion, which is good.
We met at work, essentially. Yes. Albeit in a very weird... Yeah. I mean, you know, the night that we decided we would become a couple, if you will, and I will leave it to your imagination how we did that, but I'd been to see him in a show that night where he... it was a night called Club Fantastico, which was very... It was Steve Oram and Tom Meaton used to run it, who are this brilliant double act. And Justin, I can't remember the name of the character Justin was playing, but anyway, he ended up stripped to his pants, wrestling on the floor with Tom. And that was the night I thought, there's the man I'm going to marry. That's the father of my children there.
But excellent.
Gosh, maybe he's on Tinder with a picture of them
maybe,
now.
Maybe, you never know. Hopefully not. Gosh.
I'll have to sign up.
It's bizarre. So strange.
So you've got the book coming out and the show.
Yes, because my plan is to sneakily take over the world, this Edinburgh, with my book stroke show. But yeah, so that's the plan. So I kind of mentioned the book in the show, and it'll be available to download on Amazon. So I'll stick that on the flyers too.
Merch. You've got merch.
I've got merch.
That's my dream. Every time I go to do a theatre show, I turn up and they go, "Have you got any merch?" And I'm like, no, I don't have any merch.
I've got the merch, but not a big enough name or venue. Damn it. I always do everything else about face.
As long as you've got the merch, that's all I can say. Now, talking about being likeable and the fact that you enjoy stand-up, as do I, because you think, oh, yeah, people like me. That's important. I was going to draw our attention to a story about Nigerian novelist and renowned feminist thinker Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and I have said that with utter confidence.
Yeah, you got away with it, yeah.
She gave a speech at the 2015 Girls Right Now Awards ceremony about the pitfalls of pursuing likability. Women are taught from a young age to be inoffensive, Adichie explains, which can ultimately stunt our growth as human beings, preventing us from leading fully self-actualised lives. And I'm going to read to you a little bit of this, because I have always fallen into this, and I think it's... actually not just a problem for women, but also for male stand-up comedians as well, this pursuit of likability. And she said in this speech, I think that what our society teaches young girls, and I think it's also something that's quite difficult even for older women and self-professed feminists to shrug off, is that idea that likability is an essential part of you, of the space you occupy in the world, that you're supposed to twist yourself into shapes to make yourself likable, that you're supposed to hold back sometimes, pull back, don't quite say, don't be too pushy because you have to be likable. And I say that's bullshit. So what I want to say to young girls is forget about likability. If you start thinking about being likable, you are not going to tell your story honestly because you're going to be so concerned with not offending, and that's going to ruin your story. Which is, and it's worth having a look for her full speech. Chimamanda. Mm. If you just Google Chimamanda, C-H-I-M-A-N.
I would if I could spell it.
It's Amanda with Chim on the front.
Oh, excellent. You, good.
It's very
I'm
easy,
on board.
Actually. Chimamanda. So what I found interesting about that is that, yes, I think that when you're doing stand-up, there is a part of me that thinks, oh, gosh, it is all about being likeable. But then I wonder if in a lot of female comedians' case particularly, it's about exaggerating that. And that's what women like about other female comedians, is that quite often I think, and this is a theory that I'm just forming as I speak, but I kind of think that I so obviously desperately want to be liked that it then becomes almost a sort of self-parodying thing. Do you know what I mean? That there is that sort of, it's such an obvious desperation that it actually becomes funny. Which I'm sort of just trying to make myself feel better about the fact that I have always desperately wanted to be liked. Whereas sort of female character comics, like often the best ones,
they're not necessarily likeable.
You know, thinking of like Loretta Main, Pippa Evans' character,
her,
who is just...
The white wine witch.
Yes, and insults the audience and is warped. And... I'm trying to think of female stand-ups who don't attempt likability at all. In fact, maybe this is why Catherine Ryan, I think, is yes, a genius and is doing really well at the moment, because she is almost channeling that kind of, Joan Rivers sort of utter bitch, like absolutely just bitching about people. And that is quite refreshing.
Yeah.
Discuss. Yeah. Amanda and Joe.
Well, I think also with somebody like Catherine Ryan, I mean, to look at her, she looks so angelic as well. Mm. You know, she just looks like, you know, oh, she's just like, she's so lovely and she's so sort of bubbly. And then, yeah, the material, though, is a bit of a slap down, isn't it? Which is, yeah, but she slaps on the right people as well, I think.
Punches up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, you know, comedy is all about punching up. And it is all celebrities and, you know, slightly questionable, morally questionable celebrities at that.
Yes.
Do you think much about your stand-up persona, Jo, in those terms? Or do you think you've just arrived at it by accident?
I think I'm fairly lucky in that I was sort of brought up quite bolshy because my mum didn't take any prisoners. And I've got two older brothers as well. So I kind of never felt particularly feminine, as in not I've never been a girly girl, so but I wasn't a tomboy either, so I just kind of always felt that I could say what I wanted, regardless of whether it would offend anyone or whether they like me. And I, it's interesting when you were saying that, because I still don't, even though I'm doing stand up as me now, obviously it is good when they like you, but I haven't written it, and and there are parts in it where people have said, you know, oh, that was too much for me. You know, there's a bit in it that, you know, and that, I don't mind that, because I think I've kind of just reconciled the fact that I'm quite happy with who I am. And if you don't like me, that's absolutely fine. I don't like a lot of other comedians, and I do like very much like others. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you, it's fine. Don't come and see me again, and that, we'll call it quits.
don't buy the merch.
Yeah, you'll hate the book. Don't buy the book.
You're under no obligation with the merch at that point.
But so I think I just was just fortunate enough to sort of be born in the right environment that I've never felt as if I've had to apologise for what I'm about to say or not say it because of my gender.
Yeah.
So despite being brought up in a dysfunctional council estate, put me in very good stead, you see.
Well,
so.
You see, bloody character building stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, now, this brings us to the one person you do want to like you. Which is Paloma Faith.
Oh, yes.
I feel we should put out now. Yes. It's coming up to, oh my God, we're already into Pim's Hour and we haven't even cracked it open. This is, we normally drink alcohol in the second hour of the show.
I'm all for that.
And we don't generally promote drinking alcohol, but if you care to, listeners, you may join in. And we also want to put a Twitter appeal out for Paloma Faith to be Joe's new best friend.
Yes, please, thank you. Pim's with Paloma.
Pim's with Paloma. That's, there you go. Thank Look, you. Amanda's writing that down.
Yes.
She's tweeted. She's about to tweet that. We love Paloma Faith because we were talking about this because she is, she's a grafter.
Yep.
Like yourself and myself. You know, she's worked bloody hard.
Yeah.
In fact, I met her, I met her twice. The first time I met her was we were doing a photo shoot together about, you know, women to watch.
Excellent.
It turns out she was a woman to watch, very much. And she was wearing a lampshade on her head. She was amazing. And she was delightful. And then I saw her, I did a TV show a while ago, and she was on as well. And she asked to borrow some makeup. Because they wanted to do, you know, like, well, in fact, no, because it was a radio show. Get your story straight. It was a radio show, and they, as on this show, as you will discover, you go in to do a radio show thinking, oh, it's a radio. I don't need to put any makeup on because it's the radio. And then always now, the producer says, and can we have a picture for the website?
No.
Can we just have a picture? And yeah, and you can't say no because then you look like a bitch. Anyway, so this happened, and Paloma Faith said, oh, God, I haven't got any makeup on. Can I borrow yours? And I said, yes, you can. And I took out my makeup bag, which, now, my makeup bag, I am not a great wearer of makeup and I am not a glamorous woman. And it was a Morrison's Ziploc freezer bag. Because that had come to, like, my old makeup bag had gone and I couldn't be bothered to get anyone. So anyway, so I had a Morrison's Ziploc freezer bag full of makeup. And it was quite gnarly.
That's a good idea.
And it was so, because my brain, for some reason, the first thing I thought, I pulled it out and I thought, oh, this is embarrassing. And I said, I keep it in one of these because, you know, I travel quite a lot. Like, trying to suggest I'm always on aeroplanes. So, and then I realised how ridiculous, because, like, at this point, I hadn't been on holiday for about 4 years because I'd just had my kids and everything. And then I just went, oh, actually, that's not true. And Paloma Faith was so sweet and she laughed and was lovely.
Oh.
And did not make fun of me and was just an absolute joy.
Yes.
So there we go. So she's a good one.
In my head, that's why I'd love to meet her, because in my head I think we would be very good friends. I think we'd get on.
And she was very political just before the election and she sort of had Owen Jones as her support act at gigs and stuff. So she's, you know, she, again, doesn't care about being liked. She cares about being true to herself. And
she's, like, fabulously talented. I mean,
yes,
she's amazing. I love everything she does. Sorry,
yeah,
Paloma, I won't stalk you if you do come in for Pims.
We're in the Caledonian Road.
Can
if
I sit on your lap?
You can borrow my makeup. Don't even put your makeup on. I'll get the Ziploc. You'll see, actually, that since that I've upgraded to an actual makeup bag because I was so embarrassed.
Excellent.
After that. I thought, I'm going to invest £2.99
really
in Superdrug.
I like that about the
I surprised myself
always
with that.
Always on planes. Always on planes. That's what this is not. This is not a ready meal for one. No, this is just straight from the plane.
I'm not lonely. I'm just so used to international travel that I can only eat my meals out of a plastic tray. So, right, I'm going to go. In fact, I've left the booze in the other room. So I'm going to go and get the booze. We're going to tweet Paloma Faith.
Yes.
And shall we have a record while we do all of that?
I think it needs to
be Paloma Faith.
We've got some. Oh, good.
We do. Only love can hurt like these.
Oh,
beautiful.
Nice.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
Ooh, God, that was lovely, but slightly maudlin. I feel it's because we're drinking gin. We normally have Pim's for the second hour, but because of the nature of the special offer at the corner shop,
£2 for £3.
They were £2 for £3.
Genius.
The gin, and I thought, well, we'll have that instead. Yeah. But the you know, the inevitable effect of gin, of course, is to make a woman feel a little bit sad.
Does the opposite for me, actually.
Oh, does it
doesn't affect me in the sad way.
I don't think it. I mean, I'm sure it's entirely you know, my own psychological nonsense that someone once told me gin makes
but
you
it's
sad.
Supposed to, isn't it? It's mother's ruin, isn't it, the gin?
Is that it is mother's ruin, and I am a mother. So,
and you're ruined.
What could be more appropriate? And there's even a picture of a pregnant woman with a line through it, as if to say, normally you think that means don't drink it when you're pregnant, but It's like, don't drink it if you are pregnant or have ever been. And we've also got, now we do have, because of the £2 for £3 nature of the offer, me and Joe and Amanda have all got our kind of gin and tonic. And there is a spare one for Paloma Faith.
Yes,
this has all worked out terribly well, and I expect her imminently. And during that, as well as enjoying it and feeling slightly maudlin, we were looking at your artwork for your ice cream show, which is, again, slightly disturbing. What I'm noticing is it sort of looks like there's blood dripping down your face. it's that mixture of comedy and horror that has been missing, really. You know, comedy and tragedy, people have done that.
Yeah.
But comedy and horror, that's, you're a pioneer.
Yeah, I am. I'm a trailblazer, I like to think.
And given the nature of the disputes about your venue, there could be blood.
Exactly. I know. It's hilarious. The reason that is that image is because the show, this year's show, actually starts very briefly for just a few minutes at the beginning, talking about the horrendous time I had last year. So it was genuinely called Ice Cream because I literally, there's a real picture of me, not the advertised version, but there's a picture of me that I took during the Edinburgh Festival last year. That I am a broken woman, basically. Because I took two shows up last year.
Yeah, we've all been broken.
And that's the first time, because I've done it several years before that as well, but that was the first time it literally broke me. I was in bits. It took me until about December to feel normal.
Oh, I feel your sister. I was scarred.
So that's where that image in that face comes from, because it was just like literally.
Every time I've ever done two shows, and I've been to the Edinburgh Festival for many years, but every time I've ever done two shows, it's always been, at least one of them is terrible. Or is it something goes disastrously wrong, or there's trauma, you know, it's just but because you are part of a sketch group, so one of your shows last year was the sketch
one show. Of them was the sketch group that I took up, and then stupidly, for some reason, I don't know what was wrong with me, I seem to think that I was Andrew Lloyd Webber last year, because I took like two full-on productions but on the free fringe, so in venues that are not really cut out for those sort of productions. And my solo show, which was my first solo show last year, was multimedia, multi-character. So what I'd done is filmed lots of stuff that's actually now on YouTube that was sketches that I used to fill while I went off and got changed into another character. Mm-hmm. So I had a projector and a screen. And because it's a free fringe venue, you have to take that down and home every night.
Yeah.
Because you can't leave it
in
there.
Well, you're lucky that while you're off getting changed, someone didn't have it.
Exactly. I know exactly what it's like. And I just don't know what I was thinking. No. I genuinely have no idea why I thought I could do all of that for a month.
I know. I don't know why any of us ever think we can do the Edinburgh Festival at all, but even... but doing sketch now, I've always been very tempted. I did a sketch show for the radio once with Jeannie Asheray and Julia Morris, fine comedians, and I loved that.
Yeah,
I really loved it, and because a lot of sketch comedy, you talked about not going to university, but a lot of sketch comedy, people go, it's kind of Oxbridge-y.
Footlights, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, people sort of get together at Oxford or Cambridge and they do lots of shouty young people sketches.
Yes, yeah.
And tell me about your sketches and who you do them with and how they differ from that.
Well, the sketch side of things, I am kind of sort of stepping away from for a little bit, but basically they were just... incorporated some of the characters that I do now, but mostly they were just taking the mickey out of everyday life things. So they, you know, if I'd been watching The Bridge, which I was heavily into The Bridge and The Killing at some point, so I did a sketch that was a spoof where you were just talking random Scandinavian accents and changing jumpers, because that woman in that in The Killing just had a different jumper every 5 minutes that she got out of a drawer somewhere. So so just things like that, and then just little ones that were sort of longer running sketches, but normally just commenting on stuff that I kind of thought was a bit rubbish on television. Like I had a super nanny spoof that was she was called Mo Snow instead of Joe Frost.
Yes, I see what you did there.
And her
yes.
idea was that she, at the end, she just shoots the child. So and the point was as well is because she actually hasn't got children, and the end line of the sketch was so do you have kids? No.
Most of the parenting experts don't.
It's so bizarre, but you know.
Although I can sort of see, actually, I think
it's probably easier.
Yes, you can. You more easily be a super nanny if you haven't been through, because I think if you've had them, you just go, well, nothing works. They're completely uncontrollable. There's no point even trying. I love a good TV sketch. Did you do a Strictly, anything with Strictly?
No, we didn't do a Strictly thing. I don't think we did anything Strictly. I love sketch, and naturally coming from an actor's background, you gravitate towards doing that. So it's an actor's dream, because actually last year I was playing something like 26 characters between the two shows. And you kind of just never get bored, and you just love doing it. But that's why I found it weird that I do really love the show that I'm doing now, because it is just one thing all the way through.
Yeah.
But like you said at the beginning, there is a real freedom in that as well, because you can, it's much easier to interact with the audience and to, because when you're doing a sketch show, you kind of have to treat it like there is a fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah.
To keep the environment of the sketch going, if you know, I mean, you do interact, but it's just different. There's a difference. I'm not explaining very well, but there, it does feel like a change, and it's for the better.
There's fourth wall, baby, when you're doing stand up.
And what you see is what you get, and it's nice. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I do sometimes, though, if it's a long, difficult show with stand up, there have been times, I don't know if you've ever had this, where you do sort of go, God, this is just me talking, isn't it? Oh my God, this is just me talking, and that's the point. That's like in a cartoon where a character is running in midair and then suddenly looks down.
Yeah,
because you go, yeah, oh dear, there's no way back from this. There really isn't. It's
But I think as well, in my in the show that I'm doing currently, although it's not characters, because I can't do anything normally, it's got a very weird start, and then also throughout it, I interrupt myself. So I've got an internal monologue that's external,
mm-hmm.
that interrupts obviously the flow. So it kind of, it's got a.
And are you doing that with your voice, or are you doing that?
So it's pre-recorded my voice. Yes.
Otherwise, your ventriloquism skills. Yes.
I'm not so good at that now. And also, as well, part of the setup for this show is that it's kind of an audience with show as well. So I've got questions that I pretend are. And it's funny, Paloma Faith was going to be one of them, but I changed it to Adele. But I've got celebrities that I ask the audience to read out and pretend to be.
Oh, very nice.
That are questions for me.
Oh, I love an audience with format.
Yeah, exactly. Because
really
I've always wanted an audience with, and I thought, fuck it, I'll do my own.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be waiting all day for someone to offer me that.
And who knows, the producers may be in and think, let's give her an audience.
We might have to make her famous first.
See, I would love, who would be, in fact, do you know what, one of my friends has just texted me, because there was a party that I was invited to tonight that I couldn't go to, because I'd rather be here with you two.
Oh, lovely.
And the audience.
Very early party then.
It was, well, it was a book launch.
Oh.
If we're honest. Wow. There we go, there's me fancy. And my friend who's there has just texted me saying, oh, Melvyn Bragg is here, and one of my dreams is not so much to meet Melvyn Bragg, because I have met him. I used to get the lift. There was a lift at ITV when I used to work there. There's a big ITV tower on the South Bank in London, and I used to work there, and he would often get into the lift, and I was always very impressed, but I could never say anything to him. But to actually have a conversation with him, because I have listened to, I'm pretty confident now, every episode of In Our Time on Radio 4. Aww. Which is his Radio 4 show. So I now feel like I could say, I could discuss any of these issues with Melvyn Bragg. So I really, really want to meet him. And if I were to do an audience with, he would be one of the star guests for
Excellent.
Me. It'd be Melvyn Bragg, Kim Wilde, she'd have to be there. Well, Paloma Faith, if you don't mind doing
both.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
I mean,
that'd be good.
To be honest, you know her better than me.
I know, she could come on and we could do makeup tips.
Yeah,
you know, that'd
exactly.
be all good. And then I would do a song. At the end, I would sing Petula Clark's Downtown.
Oh, how lovely.
I'm not a singer, but you always have to do a song on your audience with, don't
yes,
you?
Yes.
So have you picked your picture
song?
Well,
my show ends with a song,
good.
So I get all the audience sampled. And it's a Queen song. It's Don't Stop Me Now.
I've got
a Dolly Parton and Bob Marley wig that I give to people, despite the fact that it's not Roger Taylor and Brian May. Who cares? It's my show. Do what I want.
Well, actually, you know, I mean, it's big hair, isn't
it's
it?
It's big
Which
hair,
Brian
that's what I
May
said.
Has.
I said, you know, they may look like a Dolly Parton wig and a Bob Marley wig. Use your imagination.
Come on, guys.
Oh, you see, actually, Dolly Parton and Bob Marley doing Don't Stop Me Now is something of a dream.
I'd love to meet Dolly. Can we tweet Dolly? get Dolly in.
Yes. Well, she'll definitely be on your audience with.
Yes, she would, wouldn't she?
And mine. She's featured quite heavily, Dolly. We keep saying we'll do her as an album of the week.
Back to Dolly, isn't there?
I love the Dolly and the Tina of the Turner.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, that's something we haven't really thought about. Actually.
I tell you what, we could have Tina Turner as an album of the week. That's a good one.
Oh, let's do that next week.
Pop that down.
I love
that down.
I saw her when she came over a few years back at the O2. And my friend's husband had a, but you know when you get the box, the private box at the O2.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that was a thing.
From my background, I've never been. And she rang me and she said, "Oh, Nigel's company have got a private box for the Tina Turner concert, and they're not going to use it. Should we use it?" And I went, Yes!
So like 15 of us, like 7 of her family and 7 of mine,
all went. And I took my Tina Turner wig, and we just had the most amazing time. But what it's done, it's ruined the O2 for me. Because I only want to go if I'm in a private bar.
I mean, I've never not been in the cheap seats, kind of where you're getting vertigo.
Yeah. Yes.
When I went to see Paul McCartney, and I was terrified the entire time that I was going to fall. We were at such a steep incline.
Can I give you a tip? I did this. I went to see Harry Connick Jr. at the Albert Hall, and I'd never been in the Albert Hall before because this was years ago. Mm-hmm. And we got to our seats, and funnily enough, it was with the same Tina Turner friend. Hello, Jeanette. But we got to their seats and it was like the stage was like an ant. I was like, I can't sit here. We can't see anything. She went, well, these are our tickets. These are our seats. I went, hang on a minute. And I went and found the manager. I said, I'm terribly sorry, but I suffer from vertigo. There's no way I can sit there. And luckily, I got a real job's worth.
Come with me. We have just such a thing for a situation.
And my friend's going, I can't go with you.
She's like trying to disown me. I'm like, come on.
We ended up at the Harry Connick Jr. You know, the box by the stage, it looked like he was singing to us. Oh, we were in the box by the stage. Tip. So if you're ever high
don't
up...
Don't do that on air. What?
Sorry. I've ruined it now.
We'll cut this out of the
podcast.
Yeah,
cut it out.
If you're listening to the podcast...
It's a brilliant tip.
You missed nothing just then. We didn't say anything.
To hear here.
Don't worry about it. It's fine. That's brilliant,
isn't it?
I know, because I mean, there is no point when you're up in that.
Well, I was like, I was so gonna not sit there. I mean, he would have been like a speck.
No.
I mean, I had no, because I was so young. I had no idea how huge the Albert Hall is, and how I got a clue as we kept going up the steps. I was like, this isn't good. And another set, really. Shall I just go to the tube and watch him from there? Good get out clause. Excellent.
Harry Connick
Jr. If you happen to get a job's worth, you're in luck.
I bet they've got wise to that now. It's like the, you know, people who hire disabled people to come and let them jump the queues in Disneyland.
No! Is that a thing?
It was uncovered that rich families were basically, I mean, which... is wrong on all sorts of levels, isn't it?
Really? There's all kinds of wrong going on.
There is, yes.
And they ruin it for the rest of it. It's people like you, Jo. There are people who genuinely suffer from vertigo, and you have ruined the concert going experience.
I agree. I feel bad now. Yeah. Now I've thought about it. Yeah, don't do that. It's a bad thing.
Harry Connick Jr., you don't hear so much. It's like he must look at Michael Bublé and go, Bublé's my thing.
You're so right.
Damn you, Bublé.
But I used to love him and Chris Isaac.
Yes. Do you know what you like is a square jaw? It's a sort of, you like a lantern jaw, don't you, Jo?
You've nailed it. I've never even thought about it.
The sort of manly...
Any square-jawed men in the listeners, please tweet.
Get onto Tinder. She's on Tinder.
I don't know why, because it's all children.
She's looking for a man with square jaw, no children.
No children.
And don't say you fancy a nosh. That's the lessons we've learned about what Jo enjoys on the old Tinder. Good. Now, shall we have a record?
Mm. Yeah, I think it should probably
we've
be
sort of,
Janis Joplin, really, shouldn't
yay.
It?
Yeah. We've got a bit behind on the old album of the week, haven't we? We've only had one track from it so far.
Yes.
So, yeah, we should. And then after that, we can discuss it briefly in the album of the week.
How about Move Over?
Why not?
Okay.
They're all very short, these, aren't they?
I've selected one that's over 3 minutes. So relax, ladies.
To give us time to drink more. That's what you're thinking.
Here we go. Move Over.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
Janis Joplin from our album of the week, which is Pearl. Now, we've discussed Janis Joplin on the show in previous weeks, actually, and we decided to choose Pearl as our album this week because it's amazing. And it was the album that she was recording when she died, tragically young. And I think we should, as is traditional in the Pimm's Hour, or Gin Hour as it is today, let's raise a toast to Janis. To Janis. There we go. And if I... also wanted my woman of the week. Every week, Joe, I select a famous woman who I think our audience should be aware of. And I try and choose someone who has relevance to our studio guest. And so today, for you, I have chosen Gilda Radner. Because, you know, you are an excellent character, actress, comedian. I've just used comedian.
I can't believe you just did that.
Oh, my gosh. There will be complaints, mainly from me. You're a comedianess. And that's very easily done. All the men over the years have gone, comedian. I can't believe you said that. I apologise fulsomely. So Gilda Radner, American comedian and actress. Now, are you aware of the work of Gilda Radner?
No, I'm not.
You would bloody love her. She was original cast member of Saturday Night Live and she won an Emmy in 1978. She was born in Detroit, Michigan in 1946. She was born in 1946 and she became an actress and... And so she started off doing the National Lampoon Radio Hour. And so she met all the great Saturday Night Live people from that era of John Belushi, Richard Belzer, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray.
Yay.
She went out with Bill Murray for a while, but both very discreet about their relationship. They never talked about it. I mean, you know, going out with Bill Murray. Imagine that. And she... was one of the original Not Ready for Primetime players, the freshman group on the first season of Saturday Night Live. She was the first performer cast for the show and she created characters such as obnoxious personal advice expert Rosanna Dunnan and Baba Wawa, who was a parody of Barbara Walters. And she was on seasons and seasons of Saturday Night Live.
Why do more people not know about her? I don't know. More people probably do, just me.
Well, it's a sort of period of comedy that was sort of classic, but you might well have missed out on it. You know, I mean, it's before all of our times, quite frankly. But it is worth looking up. Obviously, there's a load of her stuff on YouTube. And she was married to Gene Wilder. That's something that a lot of people know about her. She married Gene Wilder when they met on the Sidney Poitier film Hanky Panky. And they did two more films together. But then she developed ovarian cancer, very sadly. And she died in 1989, May the 20th, 1989. But it was beloved of Steve Martin when Steve Martin was acting as guest host of the season finale of Saturday Night Live when they found out that she died. And so Steve Martin's planned opening monologue was scrapped. In its place, Martin, in tears, introduced a video clip of a 1978 sketch in which he and Radner had parodied Fred Astaire and Sid Charisse in a well-known dance routine from The Bandwagon. So really worth looking her up. And there's also a lovely... if you Google Bill Murray, Gilda Radner party story, there's a lovely story about that Bill Murray tells about a party when they knew that she was unwell and they were all off their nut on cocaine, obviously. They were all taking a lot of drugs. She was one of the only original Saturday Night Live cast members who didn't take cocaine and she was, you know, well, she and John Belushi, obviously, but she died young, tragically. But and all the Saturday Night Live cast members are sort of passing her around this party because they kind of know they're saying goodbye to her and it's a really beautiful story.
Aww,
so let's raise a glass to her as well.
Another
Gilda. So there we go. Now, let's lift the mood slightly after that by, well, let's talk about what's coming up for you. We're nearly at the end of our hour and I want to discuss in further depth.
I'm doing a London preview of Ice Cream on June the 27th at the Museum of Comedy. That's coming up imminently.
Have you been to the Museum of Comedy before?
Yes, I was watching the. I was watching some mates that were doing. There's a competition called the Old Comedian of the Year competition that's come out.
I bloody love that. It's for people over 35.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
And I had Old Comedian of the Year.
And I've got one friend that doesn't know whether to either enter the new comedian this year or wait till next year when he can enter both. I was like, both.
Old
and
new
next
comedian
year.
Of the Year. That is great, isn't it?
Wipe the board.
It's but, quite a good idea. Though to set it up, because there are so many comedy competitions, and it has now become a sort of young person's game where you do have to be about 22 with interesting hair, and I love the fact that the Old Comedian of the Year competition exists.
Yeah, it's hilarious, and so I knew a couple of people actually in it, and in the semi-final, so I was there about 2 weeks ago. So I think the final is this. I think the final is this Sunday. So if you want to go and watch
with
it.
Ages ranging from about 40 to I think Lynn Ruth Miller's in it.
81, Lynn Ruth. Yeah, she was one of the ladies I was there to support as well. So yeah, and she's brilliant.
Well, she is an inspiration, isn't she? Because people love. I know that comedy, there is a sort of a youth fascism in all areas of entertainment, but people love Lynn Ruth, and seeing someone in their 80s on stage.
Yeah. It's incredible. And the fact that she didn't even start until she was 71. So it's not like she's been doing the comedy routine for like 60 years.
It's not
years.
Like Ken Dodd, where you just
no,
go, this
exactly.
is...
She hasn't got a tickling stick or anything. but no, she's great. And actually, she's another thing I'm doing in Edinburgh is... actually, here where we are, the Pleasants are doing a series of monologues at the Pleasants Attic.
In Edinburgh.
One of my monologues is in that, and Lynn Ruth is doing it.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Is that a late night, early morning?
It's I think it's 4:30 at the Attic.
So hang on, are you doing that for the whole run?
I'm not in it. I've just written it.
Oh, great. Oh, sorry. Good. I was just going to tell you off for doing two shows. So you could my stern mummy face there going,
good,
now, Joe,
good.
What have you done?
Yeah, no, it's not me. I've stepped away from it now. So, but Lynn Ruth is doing it because it's a piece called Invisible, which is about being older and... and the aging process.
Subject
da, da, da.
Close to my heart.
Yeah, and also I'm really pleased that they chose it because I don't think there are many people writing for people in their 80s. Because I think a lot of people just go, oh, well, we can't cast that.
Yes.
I wrote a piece that was in another showcase at the Soho Theatre a year before last, and it was a three-hander that I'd written, and the youngest person in it was about 17. But the other two were only 40s, 50s, and they almost didn't do it because they didn't think they'd find people that would do the older part.
Gosh.
And I was like, this has to be done. So I quite often, as a writer, I cast it myself in my head, so I approach people with the cast now.
Because
I knew if I'd have just sent off a piece about an 80-year-old, or she's actually older than Lynn, we're playing older than she actually is, which is probably unheard of as well. But if you don't attach someone to it, people are just looking at it and go, that's too difficult. Yeah. No one's that age that can do that.
I had this very conversation with, because I have in the process of writing a piece for two women in their 80, I mean, they're 80 in the piece.
Excellent.
And and had a very depressing conversation with someone who was going, well, I mean, even if you can get them, they won't be able to remember their lines.
It's outrageous. It's like, well, but also, these things need to be, I'm sure yours as well, whatever you've written needs... We're all going to be there at some point, hopefully, if we're lucky. So the things that you're dealing with are things that are important for young people to acknowledge and watch. We're an ageing society. So the fact that we're so youth-orientated is crazy.
Yeah.
Bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. So, I'm really chuffed about that. I'd forgotten about that, sorry.
Oh, well, good. No, well, I'm glad. I'm glad I've... You're not even 80 and you've got no memory, so imagine.
Exactly.
Imagine how you'll be when you get to that.
I'll never get cast in anything. Shit.
So the Museum of Comedy, and the Museum of Comedy is a celebration, in fact.
I love it because I did the first London preview that I did. I need to say premiere.
The red carpet. She's put her own red carpet.
No, my first premiere was my first preview is in April at the Leicester Square Theatre that I love as well. I love it there.
Yeah.
And so the next London one is at the sister one, which is the Museum of Comedy, which is great space. I love it. I really, really love
really
it.
Really nice little bar. It does feel like you're in some old-fashioned drinking den.
Yes.
And there's loads of amazing books about comedy. So if you are in any way a comedy nerd, you can pass many happy hours just leafing through. Because you can leaf through all the books.
It's great. It's such a nice space. And I think, although I love the Leicester Square, there isn't really anywhere, there's no kind of proper bar there. Mm. So you kind of have to go into a show and then scoot away. Whereas actually you can have a little mill before you go in and a little mill before you go
somewhere. I love a mill.
I like a mill. I can't mill enough. I love a booth. A booth is my favourite thing. Anywhere with a booth, I'm in.
You should start bringing your own booth in the same way that you had the box at the O2. Yes. You should just always bring a booth.
A flat pack booth.
Yeah, we could construct that. A little cardboard booth for Joe to have. And a red carpet so that you feel like you're doing a premiere.
I've suddenly developed a premiere.
And your audience is with. And just some little, you could have like one of those, like a broom handle that you put across your shoulders with celebrities' faces kind of hanging on.
Yeah, I'll have to have that.
So you've got your celebrity entourage. Paloma Faith on one side, Dolly Parton on the other.
Has she tweeted? No.
Damn
her. I'm going to double check that.
Double check that, please.
I think her phone's off.
Oh, she's probably busy.
I'll just text her. I'll just text my old mate. Oh, look, there are two. Oh, no. No, we've tweeted her as yet nothing, but still. It might happen. Oh. We'll tell you by next week. I'll give you an on-air update, listeners.
Please do, yeah.
Well, she might even be coming herself for a gin next week.
She probably would.
We'll have drunk it by then. Paloma, but that gin is probably going to get drunk. So you've got your lovely Museum of Comedy.
Yes, I do love it there. The thing I'm working on at the moment is just the last few edits of the book, which I'm hoping will be able to be uploaded to Amazon by the end of the month in time for that last London preview.
And so, look at me being old. How do I get just help. I just little search for ice cream? We should be doing impressions of old people as being inept. We're contributing to the ageism. It's not my age. It's my general fuckwittedness.
I'm not very techie either, so I've got someone that's very helpfully doing it for me.
Good.
Getting it onto. I don't know. I read tons. I read loads of stuff all the time on my Kindle, which I love. But I have no idea how one gets things onto Amazon.
Somebody's
doing that for me very kindly. Thanks very much. Love you.
Oh, I tell you what I've discovered is Hive. Hive.co.uk, which is, instead of ordering from Amazon, you can, and it doesn't, it's not for Kindle, but you can get things sent to your local independent bookshop.
Oh.
So it's
I thought that was the heating control system.
Oh, God, yes, it is.
When you said, I've got Hive, I was like, why are we talking heating controls? Well, that's not very well, Lucy,
I'm feeling so flushed. I keep ordering more and more things. No books turn up, but the heating goes up and up and up. Well, maybe it's the Hive. I'm going to have to look it up. But anyway,
that's a good service.
It's quite good. Yeah. It is quite a good. I always like to mention that, just as a little, a little extra thing. If you fancy a change from Amazon, it's quite nice. Anyway, good. But I won't be able to order your book on that. So let's not talk about it. Let's talk about how we can do it. And do you have now any plans to do more sketch stuff?
I would like to do more filmed sketch stuff. I actually did a pilot of sketch stuff about 10 odd years ago when I very first finished drama school, which is actually still on YouTube and it still stands up quite well even today. But that's my first love. I only ever really wanted to do TV sketches because you've got more freedom of what you can do. Mm-hmm. So when I started doing them quite many years later on stage, you kind of can only do so much naturally.
Yeah.
But this is why TV companies don't want them, because they're expensive to make.
Are there any sketch shows on telly at the moment? Let's have a think. They sort of pop up every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Cardinal Burns and things like that, haven't you?
Well, you've got Cardinal Burns.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any others, though, that might involve some women. And I can't.
See, what I wanted to do was my character show last year was called Berkshire. And it was, I basically put all the characters that I've created that come from the fictitious Berkshire, spelled my way, my name, obviously.
Which we should say is B-U-R-K-E.
B-U-R-K-E.
There's an E on the end.
Yeah, there is. And my dad's not Michael. And so I wanted to create this world where all these characters sort of come from and work. And it would be a sketch show, but it would be, I suppose, more kind of League of Gentlemen-y in that they all come from not Royston Vasey, but they all kind of live and work in a certain area, but they would all be sort of played by me because I'm a megalomaniac.
Yeah, what you want is the kind of one person sketch. Is that something that used to
That'd
be massive
to
when I was a kid? It would be your Russ Abbott's
Stanley or Baxter.
Stanley bloody Baxter,
yes.
Dick Emery.
Yes.
Why doesn't that happen anymore?
Why doesn't but none of them are women.
None of those are women.
Some did try. Stanley Baxter was a very good woman.
He was very
yes.
good. Well, Dick Emery was a very good
yes,
woman, actually.
That's true.
Female only sketch shows of my youth.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, Victoria Wood, there was quite sketch heavy.
But she very much
places.
Was like a rep company, wasn't she? She had the same team
yes.
that she still works with today.
Mm.
Whereas, like, the Stanley Baxter show was the Stanley Baxter show.
Yes. I was in the Russ Abbott show. That
were
was my
you?
First ever, yeah.
You
first
told
ever
me
TV
about
appearance.
This before. Did
I
you
have.
Not just find the VHS?
I have, yes. In fact, yeah. I must put it up online because
please
it
do.
Really is. Yes, it's an extraordinary performance from me and my cleavage. Most I didn't realise at the time how revealing the dress was. It was a pride. In fact, I think I have talked about it on this very show. It's a Pride and Prejudice parody
with
excellent. Me and Russ and Liz Dennis. But yes, it's worth. I could have certainly held a can of Coke in the cleavage that I had in my Regency period costume.
Yes, because they
dress.
Help with that as well, don't they? That's
they
good.
Do. But yeah, that was good. Yeah. You see, that's what we want. Is we want the Joe Burke. The Joe Burke Show. That's
well,
what
I
we
definitely
need to be
want that, but nobody
for.
Else does.
Well, Catherine Tate. Sorry. Hello.
Yes.
Catherine Tate. There you go. You need to get on that.
I
really.
Need to get
you
on
need to
that,
be doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Well, she, of course, started in Edinburgh, and I remember seeing her Edinburgh show and thinking, wow, this is good. She's going to be something huge.
Yay.
And, I mean, I wasn't the only person who thought that. It's not like I'm trying to take credit. I saw that girl and I thought, I'm going to make her a star. I saw her along with a load of other TV producers and people who did then go on to make her career. But yeah, it's...
There's loads of stuff that you can do. The other thing I'd like to do as well is Mary, my favourite character, my first one. I'd like her to have her own chat show as well.
Well, again, Mrs. Merton, what have
yeah.
you know, there's been.
But there hasn't been anything like that for
no,
ages.
No.
And I've got it all specced out because she lives already with her ageing mother. You can see some clips on YouTube of this because they were part of my last year show, but she already lives in an old people's home, Peter Pan.
Nice.
Home for the hopeless.
Yeah.
I'd like all the guests to arrive on the Stannis stairlift.
Very good.
Yeah.
My dad's got a Stannis stairlift, and
excellent.
It is
we can film
incredible.
It there.
Incredible. Yes. Yes.
Lovely. Lovely. And the whole idea is that Mary doesn't give a shit about any of the guests and doesn't really know, but they come with a medical chart, so she has a little look now and then about what they've been up to. Vaguely interviews them.
Actually, that's actually a very good idea for a chat show. It's just my, you know, my ailments and me.
Yes,
because people are very prepared to talk about.
Yeah,
those
that's
sort of
a good idea.
Nowadays,
yeah, maybe
they?
She should. Yeah, excellent. Let's work on it.
Let's work on that. Okay. Very good. Well, yeah. See, a bit of stand up, a bit of sketches, and then your own chat show in character.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Done.
An audience with. It's all working.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate aim. What if you're doing a signal? You've got 1 minute.
Mm.
Oh gosh!
No, I did the signal rather than say 1 minute.
I know, and then I just
I'm just going to say
up.
There's 1 minute, Lucy.
I thought you were just raising a finger to interject in some way. Good. Well, I mean, so the we've established the eventual plan for world domination, but
exactly.
The immediate plan is Edinburgh previewing, which are the preview dates going to be up at your website, joeburke.com.
It is. Yeah.
And that's joeburke.com. And Edinburgh, I will be coming to see you for a number of reasons, because I am looking forward enormously to seeing the show, and also looking forward to turning up at the venue to see if all the generations of Kennys are there having a fight. It's worth going, ladies and gentlemen, to the Cowgate Head in Edinburgh to see if it all kicks off, I would say.
Check it out.
Well, what an absolute delight and pleasure to see you, Joe Burke, and as always, Amanda Redman, our producer, has been, I mean, never not a joy to see you.
I'm sorry, there was a double negative there. I just had to. It's never not.
It's never not.
I'm going to write that down and check.
I think I might have just been a bitch, but let's leave that hanging. And thank you very much for listening, guys. And we will see you next week.